we started it as a startup, and what we try to do is to pick and choose more and more processes from the existing organization where they can add value, and then we get used to it from both sides, and now we are trying to integrate more and more.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
He has a degree in automotive engineering and has worked for more than 10 years in marketing functions at LeasePlan. As managing director, he started and scaled the LeasePlan Bank. 7 years ago, in 2017, he joined Arendt. For almost 125 years, Arendt designs and creates inspiring and healthy working environments. At Arendt, he started the furniture as a service proposition. After developing Arendt's digital, e-business, and sustainability efforts, he was appointed Chief Commercial Officer in April this year. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you. What an introduction.
Rob, what's the favorite piece of furniture in your office?
That's our newly designed task chair, I would say. It's called the Arendt Remote. It's the most sustainable task chair there is. So that's the one. And we have it in pink. So we also have it in a special color instead of the boring black. So that's a really nice one. You should buy one.
Okay. Should I buy one or should I rent one?
As a consumer or as a business? It makes a difference.
Yeah.
Have a business, I would say, well, make a subscription to it.
Okay, nice. I want to talk about that one, and especially about the leading question for today will be the level of integration of the subscription business. Overall, before we dive into details, would you say your furniture as a service is rather an integrated business, or is it more separate to your core business selling?
That's a good question. Well, when I started Furniture Service in 2017, indeed. And when we started this, we looked into it as a startup. So as a startup, it's a separate entity within the group. And what we did is, in the beginning, we decided to leave as many processes as how they are. So how it works is that our traditional salespeople or our existing salespeople do not sell our products to a end user, but sell the products to that separate entity. And that separate entity is called Circular Interiors. So Circular Interiors is a customer of the sales team within the Arendt group. So they sell it to Circular Interiors, and then Circular Interiors start invoicing the monthly fees. And the beauty of that is that you don't have to change so many processes inside. You have to train salespeople, obviously. So all the administration is done within the SPV.
Okay. Let's stick to that market side and look at the customer. How do customers normally get in contact with your furniture as a service offering?
Yeah, we advertise a lot. We train our salespeople a lot. And to be honest, I think that's also the hardest part of this because it is very different from what we typically sell. We exist for 130 years, as you know. So this is something very new and very different. So I think it's the advertising, it's the training. But then again, what's also important to note is that we do not sell it as a financing solution or something. I think many people get, put on the wrong foot if you think about furniture as service, that it is some kind of a financial product, which in a bit it also is, but we try to sell it as a circular product because we very much believe, we as Arendt, is that we are the manufacturer of office furniture. We believe that we are the best to refurbish our own designed furniture because we design it with disassembly already in mind. And we believe that we are the best party in the world to refurbish our own furniture. So it's much more a circular model instead of a financing solution. So it's not about the funding element of it. It's very much about our circular solution. And I think that is really gaining traction. But then again, if you sell furniture to a existing customer, you most likely talk to the facility manager. If you're now starting talking about furniture as service, which is off balance on the customer's side, you also enter the financial sector within our customers. so that the DMU is different. So that makes every now and then a little bit difficult.
What's DMU?
The decision-making unit, sorry.
Ah, okay.
So many times finance is also involved on the customer side, which makes sense, but well, those are longer processes to sell it every now and then.
Yeah, okay. And let's stick to sales. You mentioned this is one of the biggest challenges.
Yeah.
Do you have a dedicated furniture as a service sales team, or are all sales reps covering that?
Yeah, we assessed all the various options. So at the beginning, we thought we should have a dedicated salespeople who's the specialist in furniture as a service. But then again, knowing that our market is changing so rapidly, because today we also have to inform our clients about CO2 emissions of products, about circularity in our products, and then also you have to explain a lot more about furniture as a service. And as you know, all the offices in the world are changing in much more a hybrid working community. So if you are in sales within our company, you have to learn a lot and you have to know a lot. So it's difficult. So if you would go for the model that you have a specialist in place for furniture as a service, then you would also need a specialist for hybrid working, and then you also need a specialist for all kind of other things. So we try, so that's why we decided we do not point specialists for this. So we ask our traditional salespeople to sell it. But if there are certain very specific questions, we have a business manager of furniture service in place who can answer all those difficult questions. So I would say the beginning of the sales cycle starts with our normal salespeople. If it gets complicated, well, we have our expertise here in my team.
Okay. You mentioned this is in particular challenging, a challenging aspect. What makes it so challenging? It sounds so easy.
Yeah, because if you shift from a sales to a furniture as a service model, what typically customers do is that they multiply the monthly installment times the term. And then they say, well, if I buy it, I pay, let's say, €1,000. And now if I have it in furniture as a service, I pay maybe also €1,000 or a little bit less or a little bit more. And then they start questioning, so why should I do it? And then you first have to explain what's the total cost of ownership of furniture in your existing sales model.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the total cost of ownership if you use furniture as a service? And then the question is, do all the companies that we sell our products to have a clear understanding of their internal cost of capital? Because obviously we have to finance it. So before you can make a comparison whether furniture as a service, apart from all the environmental benefits of using furniture as a service, if you want to understand if it is also financially an attractive product, you first have to understand your total cost of ownership of your furniture today. And that is for many companies still a little bit of a struggle, because what they typically do is that they have an accounting manual in place, and then if they have a CapEx decision, they say, well, it's furniture, we depreciate that in 7 years. So our yearly cost for furniture is the investment divided by 7 years. And then that's the number they compare with furniture service, not knowing that we maintain all the products in the 7 years, that it's very flexible, that you can return it if you don't use it anymore. The calculation is every now and then a little bit complicated, and that is something that is for salespeople complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Which makes sense because it is also complicated.
Yeah, 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 indeed.
Yeah.
And if we stick to the salespeople for one more question, there is a traditional tension when it comes to the incentives for the linear sales, the one-time sales, and then the subscriptions. Do you have separate goals, separate targets, and in what way do they cannibalize each other?
Yeah, that's what we have done a little bit differently, because they sell it to our special purpose vehicle, Circle Interiors. That's a legal entity. So they still have their traditional sales incentives because they sell products today. So for them, it doesn't matter if they sell it in a linear model or in a furniture as a service model. So that's on the one hand. On the other hand, we also incentivize people who sell a lot of furniture as a service on top of that. So it doesn't really matter for them if they sell it to Circle Interiors, which is an entity within the group, or they sell it directly to the end user. That doesn't really make a difference. And then on top of that, we also incentivize if they have a large share of FaaS at the end of the year.
let's follow that flow. So I then also assume that Circular Interiors is the legal entity that has the contract with your customer. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then the next elephant in the room is financing the assets. I mean, one step is already the special purpose vehicle.
Yeah.
How did you solve that?
Yeah, that's indeed an elephant in the room. I used to work in the car leasing industry, as you know, and within the car leasing industry, well, many car manufacturers are a bank themselves, so they can fund themselves via capital markets. And the scale of that is obviously much, much, much bigger than what we do. But it's not a separate category. It's not a separate asset class where you can securitize some of our assets. So that's what we are constantly looking into. For now, we fund it ourselves via a bank line. Yeah.
At the beginning, you highlighted that you as a manufacturer are actually the best to offer that service because you're in control of the product and the product design.
Yeah.
Can your customers select from the whole range of the products?
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason for saying that at the beginning is because if you lease a car, as an example, if you lease a car and you want to come up with a monthly installment, you first of all make an estimate of an estimation of the residual value after 4 years, and then you know what you have to depreciate, and then you add some interest and some maintenance and repair and some taxes, and then you have a monthly installment. In our world, it's very different because we do not look at furniture with a residual value because we very much believe that during the term of the contract, we have to provision for the cost of refurbishing. So what we do every month is that we set part of the monthly installment aside. And once the contract is terminated or at the end of the contract, we have a provision that we use to refurbish the products and that we can then prep them to go into the second cycle. So it's not so much about the resale value of assets where a typical lease would very much focus on. But on our end, it's much more about what do you need after 5 years to refurbish this one to sell it again as a new product. Uh-huh. That's also why if you have an investment for a task chair of, let's say, €1,000 and you have an investment of a sofa of €1,000, the monthly installment is very different. And that's because the maintenance or the refurbishment that you need to do at the end of the contract for a sofa is much more expensive than refurbishing, for instance, a task chair, where you only have to replace the seat, the fabric of the seat, for instance. So the monthly installment is very specific to the asset class of the furniture that we provide. It's not so much about the resale value. It's about what we set aside every month in order to be able to refurbish those items at a later stage.
Yeah, and every circular enthusiast listened carefully and now is again enthusiastic because then this is what creates the incentive for you or the product designers to design the furniture that they're easy to maintain and repair.
Exactly that. And I also very much believe that if you, from an environmental or circular point of view, it also makes perfect sense because you are the manufacturer. So if we start designing products that can be easily refurbished later on, that also brings value to us. So if we have the incentive ourselves to design better and easier to refurbish products, then the cost of ownership also on the client side will go down. And that's exactly what we try to achieve. And that's exactly why we want to grow this business any further.
If you look back, when did this incentive kick in the product teams, in the product design teams?
Yeah, that's also a very relevant question. But I have to say, it's by now not coincidence, but the beauty of Royal Arendt is that we exist for 120 years and already 30 years ago, or 20 or 30 years ago, we started the cradle-to-cradle certification process. And the cradle-to-cradle certification process is very much about design for disassembly. And we already had, well, 20, 30 years ago, we were already working on a circular design where, for instance, we do not glue our fabrics to the seats, but we clip it every now and then so that you can replace it easily. So when I started in 2017, the design for disassembly was pretty much there already. It can always be better, but it was pretty much there already because if you look at eBay, for instance, and you look at Arendt furniture items, you can see that there are products from 20 or 30 years old that are still in operation. That's what we are proud of. And that's also why we very much believe, and that's, I think, also true, that especially our products are the ones that are very much open to these kind of furniture service models. Because refurbishing, that's the trick. That's the name of the game, I would say. And that's what we are very, very capable of.
Has this refurbishment operation already existed before you started furniture as a service?
No, because, well, I started in 2017 with Circular Interiors as a separate entity. A few years later, we established the Circular Hub as a legal entity. And within the Circular Hub, we refurbish products, Arendt & Gispe products, our brands. In the Circular Hub, not only the products that come out of the furniture service proposition, but also products that we refurbish on behalf of our clients. So now we have a Circular Interiors entity where all the assets are located on the balance sheet, and we have another entity where we refurbish our products and also the products for furniture as a service. So that's now a new entity within the group. So we now have the FAS entity. We now also have the refurbishing entity. So I think we now have, we have a factory, we have the design, we have the end of life processes. So I think on the entire value chain, we now are active.
On the value chain side, logistics is another topic, because if you start these models, you have to start thinking about return logistic. And I guess on the forward logistic, you use the same processes as the normal sales model.
Mm-hmm.
But the return logistic, is, does it use the same infrastructure of the same people, the same partners, or do you also there added additional partners?
No, that's also because we do not only refurbish for our furniture service portfolio, but also for existing clients. Mm-hmm. So the return logistics was already very much in place. So that was not so much of an issue.
Okay.
Thinking about ERP systems, for instance, if you start developing a new product and you produce a new product, you typically have a bill of material of components, and then you have a routing via the fabric, via the factory, and then you end up with a new product. Whereas if you now look at our automation in the circular model, you start with a second-hand chair. So you first have to disassemble it, then you have to replace some parts, and then you have to assemble it again. So it is an inverse bill of material, as you can say it that way. So first you take it apart, and then you build it up again. So if you look from an IT point of view, this is really difficult, but this is also something we solved. But I think that is, the return logistics is not so much of an issue. What needs to be done afterwards. And if you want to control it, if you want to have that in a proper IT system, that's where the headache starts.
Yeah, I can agree. Having experience in an organization built for linear sales.
Yeah, exactly.
You know maybe a model number, but you don't know the specific item, not to talk about components when they come back. How did you solve that one?
Yeah, we are currently solving it. So not saying that it has been done already, but what you see typically in the circular models, and I think that's also a little bit of a worrying trend, I would say, is that a second-hand product is not by definition a circular solution. It's much more than that. And what we are trying to do now is to industrialize our return flow. So what we're trying to do is we have a belt in which we, for instance, produce chairs. So we will extend the belt a bit, where now not the belt or chair or desk is built up from new components, but where it starts with an existing product that we disassemble. And then, if you look at our ERP system that used to work to start with components and with finished product, you can imagine that we now start on the other side. And that is really complicated, but I think we have solved it almost.
I'm not sure if you can tell more about that. One, my observation is with these kinds of IT challenges, you almost always start with customization, because there are not 10 tools out there that support exactly what you just said, the remanufacturing process. Are there 5 solutions ready out there and you picked one, or is it then also tweaking your existing IT systems?
Now, by coincidence, we were looking for a new ERP system already. So what we did in our, so we set up a process in selecting a new ERP system. So we gave them a challenge, all of them, to present their preferred solution on that reversed manufacturing process. All the big names in ERP, we asked them all to provide us with their solution on these reversed challenges. And they all did. And they all had a very different solution to it. And we selected one. I cannot disclose which one it is. But that was really, I think, the main driver for replacing ERP. They also very much liked it because that was also new to them.
Yeah.
Because, well, typically material goes in and a product goes out, and this is very different. So they liked it very much. And I personally believe that this is something that will become more common in ERP going forward.
And does that also then cover the asset management of the furnitures that are rented out, but still under the ownership of your entity? Is this also then integrated in the ERP, or do you then have another asset management tool for that?
Yeah, so what we do is at the end of our production line, if we produce new furniture, at the end of the production line, each and every furniture item gets an RFID tag and a QR code in which you can easily see what exactly what kind of material is in there, what the production date is, the weight of the product, the EPD. So all of the information of that specific furniture item is stored in that RFID tag. And that's also something when we sell it through furniture as a service, we know immediately if we enter a customer's premise, we immediately know what kind of furniture items is owned by furniture service, because you can scan those RFID tags, and those RFID tags that belong to furniture service will be highlighted, and then we know what we can pick up. And it's also important in case of a bankruptcy of a customer in furniture service. That's also something we already experienced. And then you have to, I don't know the English word of a curator who is solving the insolvency.
Yeah,
but then you have to prove that that product is yours and that is not an asset of the company in trouble. So therefore, an identification on the product is also in the circular world becoming more and more important, because what we also do within the RFID tag, if we maintain a product or we refurbish a product, we keep a maintenance log on that RFID tag. So if you scan a certain product that is 10 years old, you can easily see the maintenance history of that specific item. So you can see we replaced the fabric, or we replaced, well, whatever we replaced, it's all in that log. And that makes it very important to identify the product and to see what has been maintained or replaced already, so that you don't overdo it.
And do I understand correctly that when we look at your operations, the manufacturing, the forward logistic, the current logistic, also probably installation, this is pretty integrated approach that most of the key services are done by R&D employees?
Yeah, but that's not true. But that's not how we started, because mm-hmm. we started it as a startup. And what we try to do is to pick and choose more and more processes from the existing organization where they mm-hmm. can add value. And then we get used to it from both sides. And now we are trying to integrate more and more. But we started it as a startup. So the refurbishing capability, it's called Circular Hub. That's a separate entity. Our furniture service portfolio is in Circular Interiors. So we started it as a startup. It's a startup within a corporate, I would say. And we make use of all the existing processes that are out there, but also skip the ones we do not believe add value to it. So yeah, that's how we do it.
Let's look last at the people and culture aspect. If you follow the journey as you just described, it also requires senior and middle management buy-in, and of course also buy-in of the employees handling that. And I also was surprised that given your history and your positions before, you immediately started at Arendt doing furniture as a service. From the outside, it looks like there has been a strategic decision on Arendt's side to say, this is something we want to develop and we put a focus on, and this is the way we want to go. And there was some initial commitment to that as a basis for a later integration.
Yeah. The decision to start furniture service was taken already before I joined. So I joined to bring this to life. So there was a lot of commitment from senior management. And the reason for it being is because if you are in a linear model and you sell a chair today, then you have your income today and your margin today. That's beautiful. But if you can add value throughout the economic lifespan or the technical lifespan of a particular product and put it into more cycles, you can maybe earn more in multiple cycles. And that is something we really believe in, because what you see is, that's something we did not yet touch upon, the technical lifespan of our products is much and much and much longer than the economic lifespan or the usage period of a customer.
Mm-hmm.
Because typically a company or a customer of ours, they change offices every 7 years, I think, on average, whereas the technical lifespan of our products is easily 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if you also want to benefit from the afterlife of something you have produced 10 years ago, it makes much more sense, also from a circular point of view, to remain the owner of the product. And then the benefit, the upside for us, is to design better products that are easier to do the third or the fourth cycle. But then again, at the same time, to also earn more money on the cycles in the afterlife. And I think that works very well. So that was strategically decided, that we should add more services and more models like this into our company.
This is also the basis then for later on integration. And there were not so much, let's say, principal fights and discussions about the integration.
No. And let me be very clear. Furniture service is not the only solution to the circular challenge, because we very much believe, and that's something we see in all our large clients, is that they have a refurbishing need anyway, whether it's furniture as a service or not. They have strict ambitions also from an ESG point of view, or they have an SBTI in there. So they want to reduce, and you can reduce on, well, multiple ways you can reduce, where furniture as a service, we believe, is a very easy one to do, but it will take time to convince each and everyone to do it. But on the other hand, if they want us to refurbish their existing furniture, we are very happy to do it. And then you automatically are within the existing processes anyway. So the integration will follow almost immediately from a customer demand point of view.
Okay. And if you look at the status quo right now, what I feel like listening to what you said, you already reached a pretty high level of integration. What are the areas where you say this is still rather separate and might be something to integrate in the future?
Yeah. What is still difficult is, let's say you have a company and you employ 100 people. So then in a company of 100 people, you have 100 desks, you have 100 chairs. Well, that used to be, now it's much less. But let's say that you used to have 100 people and 100 desks and 100 chairs, which is certainly not the case anymore. But for this, let's continue. So then you have 200 items, and then you have some visitor chairs and a meeting room. And so let's say that you have 300 or 400 assets in a particular building. And what we try to do is, in our subscription model, is to make it very flexible. So if a customer does not need his desk or chair anymore, he can scan it and he can send it back. And then I would say, for invoicing all of that, that is something that is still pretty difficult. That's not part of our normal ERP, where we produce or manufacture our products. This is a separate solution, kind of a custom build. But if we can automate that a little bit better and a little bit further, I think that would really drive value, because we still have a separate administration within Circle Interiors. You can imagine, if you have a customer that sends back 5 chairs and wants to have another 10 for it, then, well, there are a lot of transactions. And that's the part that is, I would say, still not so advanced at this moment.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't want to tell the customer it's not possible because of the IT system.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we simply do it, but that's causing a real headache every now and then. So that's something we can improve. But I'm very happy that on the other side, the integration of the refurbishing capabilities, that is something that is very, very much integrated. And this is something we can certainly solve someday.
Yeah, yeah, wonderful. Rob, I have 3 last generic questions everyone in this series gets. The first one is about also your role as a manufacturer. What's the main thing you need to make sure as a manufacturer before you start a circular product as a service?
I would say, do you have a product that is able to do multiple cycles at multiple customers? I think that's the first important question to ask. Then secondly, that is something that we started very early already, the design for disassembly, make sure that you can refurbish those items. I think that is a very important element. So that would be my first response to it. So do you have a product that fits this model?
Yeah.
And if it does, then go for it.
The second question, it's more about the future. What kind of trends do you expect in the next 5 years when it comes to circular renting?
It's not strange that I say this, but what I mentioned before, there are currently in the market a lot of companies who label themselves as being a very circular solution. And I think what needs to be done in this circular market is that it will professionalize, that we will have more KPIs to it, and that we can, that our customers can easily see the difference between supplier A and supplier B.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at what kind of certification you need if you manufacture a new product and what kind of certification is necessary if you buy a secondhand product or a refurbished product, well, that is unbelievable because there are no certifications necessary for the second one, whereas at the first you need to have all of it in place. So I very much believe that this market needs to professionalize. And what I also feel, and that's not because I work for a manufacturer, but I also very much believe that a manufacturer is the one who can do this the best, can also learn from refurbishing himself in order to design even better products. So that's what we need to do. And yeah, I think also from a product liability point of view, I think also there needs to be legislation coming into play, or certifications or whatever. But if an accident happens because of a faulty refurbished product, well, I think we can wait for it for the first time to happen.
Rob, my last question is about people, because this podcast is about sharing knowledge and also connecting people. And you certainly have some goals you want to reach and you have some challenges. People listen to it right now. What kind of people should reach out to you?
Oh, I'm very interested to learn from other manufacturers how they solved this issue. So I'm also very open to learn from other industry. That's also very interesting to see. So I would say anyone has a clear view on this domain, I'm very open to meet, because I think we are in a transition, and the transition will last for a few more years, I guess. But so whoever who has the same objectives and the same ambition and the same dream, I am very happy to talk to.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Thanks also for leading that transition and sharing your experience.
Yeah, thank you.
This was another episode of PaaS Decoded, 16 conversations about the fine details of product as a service. If you liked it, share this episode with colleagues or on social media. If you missed a question or topic, please send me an email so I can improve the conversations for you. If you learned something from this episode, please provide a review via Spotify or Apple Podcasts. That helps others to discover the podcast. And don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.